previously on Popping Collars.
And, you know, at the end of the promo, like, Dusty Rhodes is, like, reaching out. He's like, I want your hand to touch my hand. And he's, like, doing a, and it's just great.
Take me to church.
But it's built around that romantic notion of suffering and, like, hard times and stuff like that. And I think Bruce kind of taps into that, too.
Greg, what a world you live in.
All roads lead to the ring.
Welcome to Poppin' Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection of religion and popular culture. My name is Betsy Gonzalez, and I serve as the head chaplain at Episcopal High School in Alexandria, Virginia. With me is Greg. Greg, where are you and what are you up to?
Hey, Betsy. I am the director of Children and Youth Ministries here in Palm Beach, Florida. And what am I up to? I am planning a trip to Universal Studios this weekend with my youth group.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit terrifying because it's like you take 14 kids, you put them down in the middle of this place where it's like it's just designed for them to like run away from you and like scatter and get lost and stuff like that. And so as a chaperone, it's a little nerve-wracking, but it's still a lot of fun at the same time. I have to admit, I kind of do youth ministry just so that I can ride roller coasters. That's pretty much the only reason I do it.
Cool. All right. Well, good luck and don't lose anybody, okay?
Okay, I'll try. Okay. I can lose one. If I lose one, that's acceptable.
That's fine.
Nice.
They'll just play Captain America on the next park day. It'll all be fine. All right. Also here is Ricardo. Ricardo, where are you? What are you up to?
Hi, Betsy. Betsy, I am the rector at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Los Gatos, California, which is sort of a little paradise on earth. And I've just gotten back from being in Wisconsin and New York City. And, you know, I almost couldn't tell them apart. But Liz Easton and I, together, one of our other co-hosts, we went to see Bruce Springsteen on Broadway. We scored tickets. We were there. And he was amazing. He was just wonderful. It was worth all hundreds of dollars we paid for it. And it was just a blissful time, and it's good to be back.
And and with us tonight is a special guest returning to the podcast, and it is Heather Lanier. Heather, where are you? What are you up to?
Hello. I am living in Vermont, and I'm doing that thing where you're winding down the summer and you still believe that there's a day or two left of the summer, maybe even a week, and there's definitely not. So prepping my kids for the school year and prepping my classes. I teach at Southern Vermont College and trying to juggle some of my own writing projects. So that's what I'm doing.
Cool. Well, Heather, thank you so much for being here. And it'll become clear in a few minutes why Heather is the one who's joining us. So this is our 90th episode of Popping Collars, and today's topic will inevitably pop up in your next Google search. I think I can actually guarantee that. We are talking about TED Talks this episode. In fact, when I was doing research and searched cultural influence of TED Talks, my first four results were from TED.com, and that's not including the video choices that were offered to me too. But this cultural phenomenon has just kept growing since it came on the scene 34 years ago in 1984 as a way to bring together interesting and groundbreaking ideas about technology, entertainment, and design, that is TED. And the first conference even featured demos on the compact disc in one of the first demonstrations of the Apple Macintosh computer, if you can believe it.
Wow.
The conference went annual in 1990 and has since spawned other thematic conferences like TED Global, TED Active, TED Women, TED Youth, and TED India. There's also a TED Education channel. And now through TEDx, you might even have had a TED event in your own hometown in the U.S. and around the world. And things really took off when TED decided that this marriage with YouTube or Netflix or whoever, you don't have to shell out the pretty penny it costs to go to a conference with all the movers and shakers, but you can watch them all for free in your sweatpants at home. So the reason why we have Heather on our episode today is that Heather herself has participated in giving a TED Talk. She has worked it. Heather, can you give us a little background on your TED Talk, where you did it, what you talked about, and kind of the process to get you there?
Yeah. So I have no idea how I ended up there. I got an email from the curator at TED. Yeah, it was a year and a couple months ago. And she just said, "Hey, do you want to give a TED talk in Milan?"
Pass.
Milan.
No. Next.
Yeah. But so my first response was like, I can't afford to go to Milan. You know, like I just thought like, no, but then I did some Googling and I was like, does TED pay for your plane ticket and your hotel? And it turns out that they do. And so then I was like, okay. So, that's what happened. I got asked to give a TED talk.
Did you get on their radar? Did you ever figure that out? Was
it probably I got on the radar from, so I write about disability and parenting, and I write pieces, essays about having a child with a very rare chromosomal syndrome. And probably, I never actually asked the curator, but probably she stumbled across this essay called Super Babies Don't Cry, which was in Vela magazine and kind of went viral. Because she wrote me like a month or two after that piece came out. And then she read my blog, so like read other pieces that I had published, and said, "We'd love for you to write about having me do something about disability as an expression of diversity or something." And I said, "Sure," but then I sort of freaked out because I thought, like, "What do I have to say?" There's a lot of panic, and it was a very intense experience with imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Well, they give you a coach.
Ooh.
Yeah, you get a writing coach, and my writing coach was great. But my first approach to attacking it was to ignore it and just sort of freak out and do other things. And I'm not like a procrastinator when it comes to writing. Like I'm happy to jump right in, but with this particular project, I was like, I'm just gonna just not do that. So I had a deadline for a draft. And then I just like cranked something out the week before. I did pitch her some ideas, but I thought at that point I was kind of like auditioning. Like I was like, they were still sussing me out. And she was like, for my original idea, I forget what it was, but she was like, okay, well that sounds interesting. I mean, just like, yeah, just get some stuff down, like give it a try. And eventually I just said like, well, how much of a done deal is this? Like, are you still considering me? Or and she's like, oh, no, this is a done deal. Like, you're coming to Milan. So I don't know. They just saw my writing and then they just decided I was going to give a talk. Eventually you get to a draft that you would deliver. So I would deliver that. I delivered that in a rehearsal online. So it was a video conference with some curators. You read the talk. At that point, you haven't memorized it at all. And then they give you feedback on that. And then 3 weeks later, you come back and you do it again. And at that point, you've got about 2 weeks before the event.
And memorize it.
Yeah. And apparently, I had 10 days before I was flying to Milan. And that's when my rehearsal was. And that's when it was pretty much it was locked. It was like, that's great. Minus fact checking. They were like, okay, that's great. You have 10 days to memorize it. And she said like, that's a lot of time. Like, this is great. You have a whole 10 days. Apparently a lot of people were still like really working on their talks up until like even past 10 days, they had like major work to do. I had 10 days to memorize it.
How many people were at Milan?
I think they were like 15 or 16.
Okay. And it was one day?
Yeah, it was a one-day event.
That's the thing that scares me about a TED Talk, Heather. Not that anyone's going to call me up, but like to have to memorize it. Like, what if you blank out? And you're like, why do you have to memorize it? Why can't they have the words up on the screen?
I have some. I have some answers for that. I think that they were allowing some people at some point to read the TED Talks instead, and there are some read TED Talks, like. Roxane Gay's TED Talk, I think, is read, and Monica Lewinsky's TED Talk. Who else? Oh. I think Anne Lamott's is also written. But I think that they just kept allowing that more and more, and that they watched audiences be less and less less connected. Not that audiences were not connected to those talks, but I think talks that were memorized were more. The person delivering the talk could kind of forget the talk in some way. There's no barrier between you and the audience. There's nothing you're looking down at. There's nothing in between you and the audience. So you know the talk so well by that point that you can just deliver it a million different ways. And that they tell you, like, you memorize it not not to get it right, but to get it wrong. So you like keep memorizing, you keep delivering it in all the different ways that you could possibly get it wrong until there's just no other ways to get it wrong. You know, like you just, you know, the talk inside out, upside down, backwards.
You know, you'll watch people do that. And the number one thing is you don't want the audience to worry for you. You don't want the audience to worry for you because that's totally distracting. You're like, oh no, she's lost, or oh no, what's happening? Or she's grappling for a word. And I've definitely had, you know, I like moving when I preach. I got used to it when I was with younger kids. And I was using a PowerPoint because they're pre-readers, and images were a really great way to kind of pull people in. Then you're able to look them in the eyes and you're able to ask questions and they answer, and there's this connection stuff. But I find that sometimes here, particularly because my time is so short, my chapels are only like 15 minutes here at school, I will sometimes do without, but a lot of times I do with.
You know, I have also, Heather, been told, I actually confessed when I was in Long Beach at a church, I said, you know what, this sermon is half done, and I think it'll be very clear when when I stopped writing. And so sure enough, I do act it out when I have it on paper. I mean, I think I do make those connections. I feel freed up when it's on the paper in a way to not have to worry about forgetting anything. But, you know, the paper was done and I looked up and I said, and here's where the switch is. I didn't even let them guess. And afterwards they said, we love the second part so much more. You were looking us in the eye and you were talking to us. You were pausing and you were even fumbling for a few words. It just felt much more engaged.
Well, there's a couple things to note. So one is that audiences do actually respond well when people mess up. So they say that, like, so first of all, you don't see when someone messes up, so they edit that out.
Oh,
so
really?
Just like this podcast, just
No.
Thank you, Greg. Future career with TED Talk.
We're edited? I had no idea.
Yeah, so if you like totally lose it, people will applaud. Like the audience will applaud during that awkward time. They say that a lot of times TED audiences are super, super like encouraging. And then they root for you even more. So in the training, like when we were doing like really quick day before kind of training, like exercises to get you to connect and be in your body and like project and be natural, they said something like, you know, just so you know, like people end up really being on your audiences really end up being on speaker sides when they mess up at some point, but they're like, that doesn't mean you should try to mess up so that people but yeah, if you like, I lost the line, you don't know it because I just like kind of recollected and then repeated the line, but then I knew that they were going to edit that out.
So you have like 1,780,441 views. Did you know that?
Wow. I knew it was over a million.
Yeah, it's coming up to 2 million. And I liked your talk. I just listened to it today. I guess I have the privilege of seeing your journey through your blog posts. And so it was interesting to see this 13 minute and 37 second talk. And I just wanted to be like, get up on stage and say, but you, and also read her blog, man. She's got all this stuff she goes through and all this turmoil. And we're better human beings for having read your blog and the other stuff that you've written. I've only listened to two. And the other one is by Brené Brown, which is in like the top 20 list of their most listened to. And it's called The Power of Vulnerability. And the Diocese of El Camino Real, where I have been now for 10 months, we've had it presented to us twice. Once at a clericus meeting, like of area clergy, and another time when we do like the chrism mass before Holy Week, where you go and the bishop blesses the holy oils on like Tuesday of Holy Week, and all the clergy get together. So we watched the same talk again about vulnerability, and I liked it a lot. I have wondered about how is it like preaching, and it's more polished than preaching, which that might be a critique of it to me. You've worked on it so, and I'm not talking about you, Heather, I'm talking about just general. One works on these TED Talks for so long and so hard, and you know, you memorize and you do all this stuff. And with some of the best preaching I've heard that feels kind of the person really inhabits what they're saying.
One thing I think is interesting about the talk compared to sermonating is that if you guys write your sermons the way that you just would write a paper, an article, or an essay or something, it doesn't sound right, right? Like, don't you have to sort of think about how you're going to deliver it and word things in a way that you would talk them out? So the same thing with the talk, the TED Talk, like, I, you know, even certain sentences were written in this way that I would have posted on the blog or would have posted in an essay. But when you actually say it out loud, it just sounds so literary or clunky or like abstract or something. So you have to you have to colloquialize the delivery in your language, you know? So
yeah, I'll write something super precious, super, oh, I love it. And then I try to say it and I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? I cannot keep this the way it is. I've written like the Gospel of John and it's a total tongue twister and I'm not going to be able to deliver it. So sorry, I need to change it. So yeah, I think there's the writing of it and the voice that's in there. But then when I sit here and I read it, I'm like, oh, that's not working at all.
I got to imagine that most people's experience of a TED Talk is just watching it by themselves on a computer, right? Like you tend to not watch these things in groups. You're delivering the talk to a crowd. You're delivering it to an audience.
Yeah, yeah.
But the majority, I'm assuming, the majority of your consumers are consuming it as an individual. Like, does your writing coach kind of like coach you into how to make your talk sound like a private conversation between you and another person? Or is it a conversation to the room? How is it addressed?
I think you just think about the fact that you have two audiences, right? Like you have the audience that's right in front of you and you have the audience that's like an individual through the computer. I don't remember that being like something that we addressed. Because you're still trying to figure out what do I have to say? I think they give you these different things like, I forget what the terms are, but it was like within the first page or within the first 2 minutes, you should get to your like core idea. Okay. And then there should be this, like, I don't know, what's your, there's, it's not just core idea, but then like by the end, you should be delivering some kind of large takeaway for somebody that's new for them. You just like sort of figure out like what is that? Like it takes a while to figure out what that is. What does the person have to say? And they're really big about like you should only be saying one thing. You shouldn't be saying four things. It takes many drafts, I think, for some people, at least for me, to figure out like what is the one thing I want to say and what's relevant to that and what's like totally unnecessary. So you have to let things get really messy for a while. That's another big difference between preaching and a TED Talk. Like this thing takes 2 to 4 months for people. Like this is sort of like if you were to give the sermon of the year or of 3 years, you know, you would take like and like a million people are going to watch it. You would take a couple months and you would like really work on this sermon. But when you're giving a sermon every week, you just get to risk a whole bunch of stuff, throw stuff out, experiment, you know, make things stick, let them fall. It's a lot less. The stakes are lower, so the risks are higher. You know, you could be messier.
In a parish every Sunday, you get to know these people. I mean, I've noticed a difference from my first sermon and my 30th sermon in a place where people, you know, they're on your side and they know you and they know your quirks. I can do a shorthand thing about, you know, and I had a cinnamon roll at midnight last night and they laugh because that's one of my things because I can't deny a cinnamon roll when I see one. And so there's built-in stuff.
So yeah, you have a rapport with your audience. Like your audience knows your ethos a little bit and yeah.
Do you have other people that preach at your church?
Yes, we have 3 assisting clergy who are all retired and they've preached a little more lately because I've been gone on vacation, but normally I preach 3 out of 4 Sundays a month.
So as someone who is asked to preach occasionally, like maybe like once a quarter or something like that, what I find is that I don't like to do it because the reason is that when I get up there in the pulpit, what I desperately want more than anything is for people to like me. And so I'm going to tell them I'm going to tell them that they're all doing a great job. And that we're all in this together and I'm going to try to deliver it in a way that I'm going to try to write a sermon and deliver it in a way so that when I'm in the receiving line after it's all over, I want people to tell me that I did a good job and that I'm a good person. But it makes me think that if you were a priest or somebody who, you know, who was up there more often, like, you know, 3 times a month, something like that, then you it's not that for you anymore. You are having sort of spiritual conversations between you, the community, and the text in a way that it's not about like whatever it is that you're bringing to it. It's about like it's about what you're all doing there together.
Yes, and you know, actually, that is all true. Something Betsy said a couple of years ago, I don't even remember, I must have been here when we were recording a podcast.
I'm very excited for this comment. Okay, go ahead.
Well, no, Betsy, you said something like, you know, you preach a ton, right? You're always giving sermons and talks and stuff. And the more you do it, the less you have at stake each time in a way. Like it just gets less. And I have gotten to that point. I don't worry so much about, you know, it's not that I don't step into the pulpit with that trepidation we've been told to have, and I do have it. I don't feel like if this doesn't go great, everyone in this room will probably wind up in hell or something, mm-hmm. or something bad like that. It's not life or death. It is more of a conversation, and that makes it easier.
Do you guys have your sermons like audio recorded?
Yeah.
Ours are video audio.
Our church has started posting our sermons on our YouTube page. Like you, Heather, I think I'm up to 15 views on my
You're kidding.
Wait, how many views did you have? Wait, maybe that number is not as close.
I do find that the TED style, though, like culturally, has altered like presentations I see at conferences. Like it has permeated as kind of a rubric of public presentation. And kind of that looking for, and then slow change on my PowerPoint, and then I'm off to this thing. And I do find it has influenced, I feel positively, because more people are connecting. Like, I like connecting. I'm also an auditory learner. Like, I like hearing things. I like podcasts. I like audiobooks. Like, that's my wheelhouse. And I'll listen to something, and it probably has something to do with what I do as a job, but you know, I find I'm influenced by the way someone presents a TED talk. And I'm also, we've talked about in this podcast, influenced by stand-up comedy and how people deliver a story and what that looks like and feels like, and how you pull your audience into that.
You know, they tell people like a day or two before you're going to do the rehearsals, if you're a TED speaker, they tell you to just like kind of be yourself, you know, like who are you? Be that person on stage and don't rehearse any gestures. Like if you've ever thought of like, oh, when I make this point, I'm going to put my hand like this and just, you know, really nail it home. They're like, if you have done any of those plans, boot them right now.
For our listeners, Ricardo just laughed and fell off the screen. Ricardo, do you practice your sermons with gestures?
No,
like all the time, or like sometimes, like a specific gesture you're going.
Okay, so Greg, I don't know. I think you can put this through. I think it's fine. Right. I'm the rector. What are they going to do?
This is really behind the curtain. I'm loving it. Go for it.
That's right. The H1. So
behind the sermon.
I was laughing because, first of all, no, I don't rehearse anything. So nothing is rehearsed. However, I actually put in little parenthetical phrases of like, you know, show hand gesture, you know? And like, you know, move arm to the left, because there's certain things I want them to be able, I don't want to forget that when I want, there's a visual that goes in, and it's so dorky. People say, I loved your sermon. Can I get a copy of the text? Sure. So I have to go back and take out all the parenthetical phrases. It'll be embarrassing.
I mean, I'm sure Bruce Springsteen has the same thing in front of him.
I'm positive.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen has pause to shed a tear.
Yeah, that's right.
Pause. Three tears from left eye.
That's right. Very specific.
I have a question, Heather, and you know, this is probably, I'm just so curious, like, is there any TED Talk gossip you can tell us, like backstage gossip that Greg wouldn't necessarily have to put on the program, but I'm just, it's so fascinating, like backstage, oh my God, you'd be surprised because la la la, and I saw so-and-so and she didn't have makeup on, or I saw this guy and he was a jerk, and you know.
I saw TED. Like,
I thought Ted. He's like 4'10". Well, like for instance,
he's so
I know
tiny.
Tiny Ted. Ted squeaks. I know.
God bless us, everyone.
Tiny Ted.
stuffing.
It's a piece of media of any variety that you've been consuming that you want to recommend for
women. Oh, yeah. I'll recommend something.
Yeah, you got something?
Yeah.
Can a non-host recommend, Greg?
I don't know. We've never had this happen before.
Listen, non-staff pick.
I've been transformed by this TED Talk conversation, I think it's possible. And I can reach for the stars. So Greg, I think we can do it.
Let's do it, Greg.
It's Betsy's show, so she's...
I say yes from a great spirit of egalitarianism.
Right.
And
nice.
Anybody... So we've come to the point in our show when we offer our staff pick, something that we have been consuming in whatever medium, and want to recommend it to listeners. And for the first time ever, we are going with a guest staff pick. Which I don't know, what is this like? Is Heather like the employee that got hired at the Blockbuster for like a week? And then she got like, then her family had to move. Like they moved. She got fired, something. But she's here. And so Heather said that she has something to recommend. So Heather, what's your staff pick?
So I have been listening to this podcast called Hurrying Slowly. Has anyone listened to any of it?
No, say that again.
It's called Hurrying Slowly.
Okay.
By Jocelyn K. Gly. I've been listening to like, I don't know how many there are available. It is fantastic. It's all about creativity and productivity, but doing it in like an intentional way that kind of keeps you sane. The podcast episode I especially love was about sleep and like prioritizing sleep. And did you know that sleep is the time during which your brain takes out its trash?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Yes. And also we are terrible predictors of our own sleep deprivation. So like they did these studies where people would get 4 hours of sleep for a week and then they'd make them do cognitive tests. And the first day they would be like, oh, that was horrible. I'm clearly sleep deprived. And then like the second, third and fourth days, they'd be like, you know what? I'm doing great. I'm feeling a lot better. I guess I'm adapting to this terrible amount of sleep. But their cognitive tests were still really bad. So we are very bad at assessing our level, like assessing our sleep deprivation. Mm. It blew my mind. Anyway, I really like Hurrying Slowly because it reminds me to, I don't know, get less done, but like enjoy it more and be more creative.
That's cool.
That's good. Yeah. I highly recommend. And I think it's probably good for many of your listeners, collar wearers.
Yeah, there are. We have collared and non-collared alike. I think maybe not for our international listeners, but this is kind of that time of year when we're all getting back to life. Like the summer here in the States is either ending or ended, as you said earlier, Heather. And it's like, it is time to get back. And I think anything to kind of, I don't know, maybe this will help me ease my transition back in a more pastoral way to think about how I'm, you know, beating myself up that I don't move as fast.
Wow. Nice. Oh, I gotta say, Hurry Slowly is kind of how I live my life. I'm always late, and yet I can't seem to I can't seem to like hurry up.
Well, guys, this has been our 90th episode of Poppin' Collars. We are like getting so close, 10 away from the big 100, which is super exciting. We want to thank you all for listening. You know that you can find Poppin' Collars in all kinds of places, including Facebook and any place where you get your podcast needs met. We are also on episcopalcafe.com. We love Episcopal Cafe and we know that you will too. Hunt them out for all your Episcopal Church needs now and in the future. And with that, I really just want to say, you know, thank you, Greg, and thank you, Ricardo, and a special thanks to Heather. Thank you so much for sharing your experience. And it's been really great to kind of talk about this with you and to see you. And we really want to recommend all of Heather's stuff. You know, check her out online between her blog and the books that she's written. And if you can just go sneak into her class, you know, maybe pick up a few things, right? You know?
Yes, come on over.
Totally legal. It's totally fine. No one will care. We just want to thank everybody for listening and keep those collars popped.